Baptist World Alliance. Prior to Mrs. Martin's election as president of Woman's Missionary Union, she served twice as president of Virginia Woman's Missionary Union for a total of 16 years. A new history of Woman's Missionary Union of Virginia, entitled Light Three Candles, lists the many phases of unusual leadership which Mrs. Martin gave to her own state union. Olive Brunson Martin was Virginia's fourth gift to the presidency of Woman's Missionary Union Auxiliary to Southern Baptist Convention. At the time of her election in 1945, Miss Kathleen Mallory, Executive Secretary, stated that Mrs. Martin's years on the Executive Board of Woman's Missionary Union and her presidency of the Virginia WMU had shown her to be, quote, an expert parliamentarian, a most gracious presiding officer, the possessor of a most pleasing voice, an alert observer of methods used by other women's organizations, a dauntless advocate of interracial relationships, and a tireless worker for and in the missionary education of young people. Mrs. Martin saw and led in many beginnings of the organized life of Woman's Missionary Union and the Southern Baptist Convention that exists today. Buildings came into being, organizations grew, mission offerings were increased, structure changed, and our work and close relationships with Baptist women around the world attained a phenomenal peak. In 1947, when a Baptist World Alliance Congress was held in Copenhagen, Denmark, Mrs. Martin was called upon to preside over a women's session. 3 years later, she completed the structure of the Women's Department of the Baptist World Alliance, and she served as its head until 1960. Through vigorous travel and skillful planning, she helped to begin the six continental unions. Mrs. Martin's life will continue to remind all of us that we must pursue our course in all phases of missions work with determination and wisdom. We thank God for memories of the life and dedication of Mrs. George R. Martin. Will you bow your heads in a moment of silent prayer of thanksgiving for this former leader, the president of Woman's Missionary Union? And now we shall sing a hymn together.
Let's make that hymn number 12. If you need the words for Amazing Grace, How Sweet the Sound, you'll find it on page 12 in the convention book.
A thousand years.
There's a new world coming in Brazil. Our message to be brought at this time is by Miss Marjorie Jones, missionary to Brazil, who is associated there with Sophie Nichols, the head of our WMU work in Brazil. And so Marjorie Jones is also a WMU associate. She was first appointed in 1955 to go to Nigeria. And after staying in Nigeria for a while, she moved over to Ghana, where she served as WMU director. Then she resigned in 1964 and later came to be on the staff of Women's Missionary Union, located in Birmingham, Alabama. Marjorie came as our Girls Auxiliary Director and stayed with us a few years, but the tug of missions was too strong. And so she, once again, was appointed by our Foreign Mission Board, this time to go to Brazil. And so Marjorie has had to go to language school more than once in order to be a missionary overseas. Before her missionary service, she was a youth director in the state of Louisiana, her native state. We welcome you, Marjorie, to here this morning and listen to you gladly as you talk about the new world coming in that wonderful country of Brazil.
Reading from the Living Bible, I would like to share again with you what Paul says about the new life. When someone becomes a Christian, he becomes a brand new person inside. He's not the same anymore. A new life has begun. All the new things are from God, who brought us back to himself through what Christ Jesus did. And God has given us the privilege of urging everyone to come into his favor and be reconciled to him. And in Colossians, he writes, "You are living a brand new life that is continually learning more and more of what is right and trying constantly to be more and more like Christ, who created this new life within you. In this new life, one's nationality or race or education or social position is unimportant. Such things really mean nothing. Whether a person has Christ is what matters, and he is equally available to all. So make the most of your chances to tell others about Christ." 91 years ago, missions began for us as Baptists in Brazil with the arrival of the first missionaries in Rio de Janeiro. From the very beginning of missions, our mission work in Brazil, Brazilians have been ready to accept the challenge of sharing the good news with their own people and taking their rightful places of leadership in Brazil and even unto the uttermost parts of the earth, even to the Baptist World Alliance. Last year, the Brazilian Baptist Convention began to make plans for the 100th anniversary of Baptist work in our country. And for these next 9 years, plans and strategies have been laid out before our Baptist people, and they were laid out by Brazilians. Those Baptists have accepted once more another responsible and challenge of growth and nurture in our convention. And I believe that Brazilians could have no greater leader as their president than one of our speakers this morning, Pastor Nelson Fanini. He's a great man, but I know that behind him is a great woman, because his wife, well, I'll just throw this in, his wife is the recording secretary of our National Women's Missionary Union, and she keeps him in tow. The role of the missionary of working with Brazilians today is a little bit different to what it was yesterday. The missionary today and tomorrow works within the framework of a strong Baptist convention with Brazilian leaders. And if ever there was a need of missionaries who know how to work on a team, that is today in Brazil. But I know of no greater compliment that a Brazilian can pay a missionary than to say of that missionary, he or she is one of us, is one of ours. In Brazil, Women's Missionary Union has capable leaders, Reference has already been made to Sophia Nichols, our executive secretary. And working with her in our national office are two missionaries and two nationals, Brazilians, who serve as age level directors and who edit magazines. And with them are many, many missionary women and national women working in states, in local positions, as well as in the national organization. Last year, we reported 4,663 age-level missions organizations in our churches, with 83,200 members of those organizations. And while this number is growing, we know that the secret of the growth goes back to the local church, where those faithful women are trying to make the most of every opportunity to share the good news with those who are around them. And as our missions organizations are growing, we are seeing results every day of our work. Who would have thought that the silver-tongued WMU president of Brazil, Dona Olinda Lopes, who after years of training, teaching, instilling in the hearts of her own children the love for missions, would last year stand on the docks and see her youngest daughter, a brand new bride, sail from Brazil to go to Portugal. But I wonder if any of us thought, or even Rubens Lopes thought, the day that he stood in Miami and spoke to the Southern Baptist Convention, issuing to us the challenge of the Crusade of the Americas, would even dream that one of his nieces would carry that challenge beyond the banks of her own beloved Brazil to give that challenge to Portuguese people. While Brazilians have sent missionaries to Bolivia, Paraguay, Portugal, Angola, Mozambique, they have not neglected the responsibilities in the homeland. A home mission board, part of the Brazilian Baptist Convention, is doing an exceptional work in the interior areas of Brazil. And while Dr. L.M. Bratcher, a Southern Baptist missionary, laid the foundations as executive secretary of that board, today, Pastor Samuel Mitt, a former home missionary himself, is facing a new day in missions with confidence in his own homeland. WMU leads in challenging the church to pray and give to missions, as well as educating in missions. And the enthusiasm that Brazilians have for their weeks of prayer, for their home mission offering, for their foreign mission offering, is something to behold. Getting to know the Brazilian missionaries, Brazil's missionaries, is one of the greatest treats, I think, of missions life. One of our foreign missionaries is a lovely young woman who is a product of home missions, Brazilian home missions. Valnice Milomens Coelho grew up under the influence of home missionaries and was educated in our Baptist schools in the interior of Brazil. When she was 16 years old, soon after she became a Christian, one of her home missionary friends died. During a memorial service for that missionary, someone remarked that a light had gone out and God needed someone else to take that place. And while this teenage girl prayed, and as she heard her colleagues pray, she aloud prayed, "Lord, that place will not stay vacant, for I'll fill it." Later on, other home missionaries helped her to go through school. They helped her to go to the Seminary for Christian Educators in Recife. And as she was finishing with honors, she thought she would go back to the interior, but her heart had always been in Africa. We had no foreign mission work in Africa. The Brazilians did not. But Valnice wrote to a pastor friend in Mozambique, and he in turn wrote back to Brazil to the Foreign Mission Board and said, "Send us this girl. Send us this young woman." And it wasn't too long after that that Valnice was appointed as the first Brazilian missionary to set foot on African soil. She went to Mozambique. Now, about that same time, Southern Baptist reassigned a missionary couple to go to Mozambique. But it has been 2 years, and only in the last few weeks has that family received a visa to go and live within that country. But Brazilian Baptists have had missionaries in Mozambique, beginning with this single young woman, followed later by a couple. And now there is another young woman who is going to visit, to join her. This is a new day in missions, you know. For when our Brazilians can go out into an African country, work with Portuguese missionaries, and be there to welcome the American missionary when he comes, this is a new day. But there's another part to that story that I'd like to share with you. Recently, I was in a meeting in Louisiana and told the story of Valnice, when one of our own missionaries, Juan Ann Fort, said, oh, and there's more to this story. For Valnice went to a meeting that I attended when the Baptist Women's Union of Africa met in East Africa. And all of the women were very, very much impressed with our Brazilian missionary. But the women who were the most impressed were the Rhodesian women. And they had given a foreign mission offering in Rhodesia, but having no foreign mission board, they did not know how they wanted to use their money. But when they met that beautiful, charming personality in Valnice, they got together and they said, here's where our offering will go. We're going to help the Brazilian missionary who is working in Mozambique. And so they gave their offering for her. For me, this is a new day that's dawning, you know. Southern Baptists for months cannot go into a country where we would like to work as we have been working. But instead, God used and is using a daughter of Brazilian home missions. And she, in turn, is being helped through gifts and prayers by Africans who also are a result of missions. And this is what missions is all about. And this is missions of today, and it will be missions of tomorrow. Brazilians are great patriots. And I sort of get caught up into it because I love this nationalism. I can sing Minha Patria para Cristo along with the Brazilians, and I've caught it from them. And you love to sing with them. But there are no greater patriots. There are no greater people than our Brazilian Baptists when they begin to think about home missions, because they love their country and they want their people to be one. And they love their missionaries, their home missionaries. Baptist young women, or the counterpart of Baptist young women in Brazil, so loved missions that for many years, 41 years ago, they took upon themselves the support of a home missionary, a single woman, Dona Marcolina Magalhães. They supported her with their funds, with their prayers, with their interest. And she worked for many years in the interior of Brazil until 1959. She was supported by those Baptist young women. In 59, she came under the cooperative plan as the Home Mission Board was supported through that plan. Dona Marcolina should have retired last year. And when she was recognized by the Baptist young women in our country, she said, I'm not going to retire. I'm going where the action is today. So don't ask me to retire. And so Dona Marcolina went to the Trans-Amazon area of our country. And this is where the new day is in Brazil. God knows, and God knew, that there would be a highway that would be built in Brazil. There are actually two highways that are being built. One highway goes from Belém to Brasília, north and south. The other one goes east and west, which is the Trans-Amazon Highway. And these highways bring in a new day. On the Trans-Amazon Highway, the Brazilian government has offered land and seed to help bring in families to homestead. And in answer to this offer, more than 100,000 new residents have moved in an area of 60 miles. Over 1,000 working families were moved in, And already over 800 babies have been born in that area. By the end of 1973, plans are made to move in 3,000 families. The Home Mission Board, many years ago, put missionaries all up in that area, and God was in on that plan. Today we have a itinerant worker who works in that area. And now, Donna Marcolina, a veteran missionary, has said, "I will go. Don't ask me to retire." And so the Home Mission Board said, "All right, we'll go with you." And the interesting thing is, there was a church, the First Baptist Church of Niterói, where Pastor Nelson Fanini is the pastor, bought the home for our home missionary. She'd never had a home before. She always lived in a pension, in a little boarding house, or had a room. But this great church built her home, bought the land, and today she is working in that area. She has a great congregation going already. The Home Mission Board is encouraging professionals to ask to be transferred when opportunities open from their banks and army posts and government positions, as well as teachers to go. And meanwhile, not everybody can go to the Trans-Amazon Highway or to the Baling-Brasilia Highway. Some will go and stay in homes, in the cities. Some will stay where the work is already established. But they must be informed. They can witness where they are in their cities. But they too are a challenge for us, and they are part of tomorrow. WMU has an excellent leadership training plan in Brazil. And for the last several years, we have really worked hard trying to train our women. I took all the leadership courses under a Brazilian, and I learned a lot. And then I, in turn, have taught it too. Sometimes God lets a little ray, just a little glimpse of the future, shine through. And that's enough to carry you on into tomorrow. I saw a little glimpse of that right before I left in working with a group of mission friends. I'm an assistant leader, but I sat down with a group of boys and girls, 4 and 5 years old, at a block center. And we were going to build a house for one of our home missionaries, Dona Beatriz Silvia. Those children had learned about Dona Beatriz. They love her. They have a good leader. And as I watched the children build their blocks, build their house with blocks, one little boy said, "Donna Marjorie, look at my house. This is my house for my missionary." That little boy has nothing. He's only 5 years old. But when he beamed at me and showed me his house, and I looked at it and looked at with his eyes, he said, "You see that block right there in the middle? That's her TV." And I said, "Her TV?" He said, "Oh, yes, Donna Beatriz has to have a TV because every missionary has to have a TV." Now, I know that's the most important thing in that child's life today. But he has caught a glimpse of missions. For that little Brazilian boy, one day, can take that love for his missionary, wanting his missionary to have the best, and he'll take it right on into tomorrow. And when we can train, beginning with the preschoolers, and go right on through, informing, teaching, sustaining, and helping our missionaries, this is the new day that comes into Brazil. The Home Mission Board is asking the Equatorial Brazil Mission to join them, join missionaries along the Trans-Amazon Highway in putting missionaries all across that northern area. But this means that Southern Baptists have to send missionaries for us to join hands. And this is the new day when the Home Mission Board of a country turns to the Foreign Mission Board in America and says, "Take our hand and work along with us. Here is tomorrow." And I do not believe that Southern Baptists can turn down a challenge this great. For we too want to be in on the new horizons of missions. Missions always issues in a new day for the person or for the nation, and thus is new life begun through Jesus Christ. those roads of the future must be kept open through missions, through Jesus Christ. May we have a new day, a new world in Brazil.
Thank you, Miss Jones. Indeed, we have a story to tell to the nations that will turn their hearts to the right. Would you turn to 36 and let's stand as we sing. We have a story to tell. You may be seated.
Mrs. Lee N. Allen, Public Relations Director for Women's Missionary Union, will present Giant Steps Cross Country.
I want to tell you some step stories which might be otherwise entitled Watch Whose Footprints You Follow. Once upon a time, there was a baby creeping on hands and knees. She got tired of her ground-level view of the world. I'm old enough to do better, she said, so she decided to walk. How she worked, learning to keep her balance. The first step was the hardest, but not too many tears later, the baby was trotting triumphantly. Now, here's another step story. Once upon another time, there was a little girl, full of energy. She laced up sneakers to romp and play. She buckled on shiny patent leathers to walk to church. Sometimes she liked to go barefoot in the cool grass. But regardless of how she was shod, she was always running around in circles, really getting nowhere. An older friend gave her this advice: set goals and direct all your steps toward them. If you try walking as I do, then you'll make progress. But the little girl protested, "Your steps are too big." But she stretched and she skipped and she took lots of quick little steps and she kept her eye on her goal, and one day she actually outstepped her friend. Now for story number 3. Once upon a time, long ago, there was a young lady who was devoted to Woman's Missionary Union. Despite her hobble skirt and pinched-in toes, she found a way to leave indelible footprints for later generations to follow. Now, here's another little tale. Once upon a time, not too long ago, women watched a new kind of footprint being made, and they heard the dawn of a new age and of new ways born in the words, "One small step for man, one giant leap for mankind. Now, all good stories have a moral, and the moral of these stories is morale, the morale of Woman's Missionary Union. We know we have a great organization. We know that WMU is the best means of getting women in step, promoting, participating in, and supporting missions. But we also know that today, with many changing demands on women and on missions, that more creativity and more enthusiasm will be required to keep WMU in the center of its potential. Why, it'll take the fresh determination of a baby learning to walk, the contagious energy of a schoolgirl, the diplomacy of a Gibson girl, and the courage of an astronaut to do it. But we here today can make WMU the strategic organization for women and children in this age. Which brings us to another story with a moral. Once upon today, WMU is putting its best foot forward to be sure that every Baptist woman, girl, and preschooler finds her place in the WMU lineup. We are in the exciting first lap of a cross-country campaign called Giant Step. Our goals tell us exactly what we will want to accomplish. First is to have at least one organization for each age in every church, to provide an appealing place for every potential member: Baptist women, Baptist young women, ACT teens, girls in action, and mission friends. Now, the second goal is to have a 25% increase in membership in each age-level organization or in the total WMU of a church. This means more homemakers, schoolgirls, mothers, preschoolers, career women, ladies of leisure, students, regardless of their age or their schedule. Now, the third goal is this: a 25% increase in WMU magazine subscriptions, or to have 100% of members receiving WMU magazines. Because the more people reading WMU magazines, the more missions understanding will spread across churches. Now, after only a few months of giant stepping, WMU's march is speeding up from walk to run. And you'll agree with me when you hear four more true stories about Giant Step. The storytellers are women who are filling some of the biggest shoes in WMU today. They are state WMU presidents. I'd like to introduce four WMU presidents who will be your storytellers. First, Mrs. Lamar Jackson of Alabama, then Mrs. Gilmer Krause of North Carolina, Mrs. Hughes Sheriff of Missouri, and Mrs. I.W. Bowen III of Georgia. In turn, they will tell you Giant Step stories about their state. Mrs. Jackson.
When Woman's Missionary Union adopted Giant Steps, Alabama WMU, in cooperation with the sesquicentennial of our state convention, had already adopted a 10% annual increase each year for 5 years. We decided that, well, while you were taking two giant steps, we would just take five lady steps. But we figured without the enthusiasm of Alabama women, one large church in Birmingham came back from Ridgecrest and had a week's emphasis on each one, bring one, cultivate one. They had reached all three giant step goals by the end of September. Then they went to a fall leadership conference and discovered that this was supposed to be the emphasis in January, February, and March. They wanted to know, did we do wrong? We made a quick survey of some of the WMUs who had already achieved the Giant Step goals and found that they used many different methods. The most popular was to organize new groups. Several WMUs found that their women felt a need for a deepened spiritual growth, and so they organized new Bible and prayer groups. One WMU director invited Baptist young women to her home for dinner, where she introduced them to study and action opportunities. The result, 25 charter BYWs. Another WMU felt that Mission Friends and BYW just naturally went together. They were right and reached their increase in membership in organizations. Organizing new youth groups through more careful age-level grading was the way some WMUs reached the membership goal. An enlistment emphasis was successfully used by many. One made contacts through women's Sunday school classes, emphasizing the need of all the church women to meet together instead of just in their age-level class sessions. Several WMUs had emphasis on re-enlistment of old members. One director carefully prepared enthusiastic reports of WMU activities for the monthly church business meeting. The moderator would say, "Sounds like those WMUers are really a busy group of people." The director commented, "Our membership increased."
People like to be where the action is. The women of one rural church drove the church buses to bring children to youth meetings. Two churches gave the credit to their pastors. One said, "Our pastor really loves WMU and encouraged us and helped us to get good leadership." She added, "If you don't have enthusiastic leaders, you might as well close up." Publicity was used by some who said they posted their church with giant steps. Focus Week activities helped others. A director wrote, "We really had fun. We climaxed the week with our ladies in charge Sunday night singing in the choir and having a fellowship. We made red felt hats with VW insignias on them for all members. And as we enlisted new members during the day, we tagged them with red hearts. Believe me, Sunday night, the women with our hearts really felt uncomfortable." Many churches reported magazines in their church budgets. They said when they reached the membership goal, the magazine subscriptions automatically increased. But one group started the giant steps by achieving 100% in magazine subscriptions. The director stated, "After they all read and studied the magazines, the other giant steps were easy." One gave credit where it is most due. "We serve a great God," she wrote, "and He gives us the strength to achieve."
Don't we love these giant step stories? Now we'll hear from Mrs. Gilmer Cross of North Carolina.
Enthusiasm for Giant Step continues to increase in North Carolina. As I studied the reports from the associations across my state, I made several observations. First, the leaders are using creative ways to promote Giant Step. For example, some associational WMU directors are speaking to the pastors at their meetings. Some associational WMU directors are cultivating the interest of pastors in missions. The members in some of the associations, the members of the executive of the WMU Council contacts every 3 months a church that does not have Women's Missionary Union. The girls, the young women, and the women in churches where there is no WMU are being invited to meetings of their respective age level organizations. One association where there was just one ACTeens organization invited girls of ACTeen and Girls in Action age and their mothers to a banquet. 89 people came. The girls were challenged to find some woman they would like to have as a leader and ask that person to become their leader, or at least consider becoming their leader. Materials and information would be sent from the state office. Help in organizing was offered. 10 adults signed up, willing to receive the information and to consider being a leader. The second observation that I made was that initiative and effort bring about results. One association has made a 12% increase in membership in the first 6 months, 265 new members with 13 new organizations. One church made a 50% increase in subscriptions by sending magazines to every member. Several churches send royal service to the new members they get. One church organized a new Baptist women with 14 members and 14 subscriptions to Royal Service. Another new Baptist women organization started with 40 members and 40 subscriptions to Royal Service. Because of such efforts as these, North Carolina has more subscriptions to Royal Service than any other state in the Union. In the first 6 months of Giant Step, Baptist Young Women of North Carolina have reached 1/4 of their goal in new organizations. Associational leaders have experienced and are discovering in their associations a new vision of how to reach others, an excitement in enlistment, and a deeper commitment to missions. And finally, I observed that really The key person is the associational leader as she promotes Giant Step.
I hope you're making notes about these good ideas. Let's see what ideas and stories Mrs. Hughes Sheriff can bring us from Missouri.
Giant Step is making an imprint across the state of Missouri, and we're really excited about it. Many organizations are reporting an increase in membership. A Baptist women organization from a metropolitan area reports an increase of 8 from 18 to 46. How did they do it? That was in their Baptist women's organization. They provided a transportation, bus transportation, to their meetings. Some are reporting new WMU organizations as a report of good mission book studies. Two report new GA organizations as a result of studying Jeff the Baptist. One enlisted 28 girls and the other 20 girls. Several are reporting WMU magazines in the church budget for the first time. A WMU director from one of these churches attended WMU Week at Glorieta and was challenged by Giant Step plans. She went home, shared them with her WMU council, and things began to happen in that church. First, they were able to place their WMU magazines in the church budget. Then the WMU organized two new WMU organizations. And from the beginning, they promoted Each One, Bring One, Cultivate One. And in 6 months' time, they had increased their WMU membership 12%. Yes, they have claimed two Giant Step certificates, and they're well on their way to claim the third. We're excited, too, about the new work that's being started in churches that do not have a Woman's Missionary Union. Our associational WMUs are busy promoting Giant Step, and they're reaching some of these churches. One association used the garden party theme, and who wouldn't want to attend a party? They mimeographed individual invitations and sent them out in a packet to the WMU directors and to a key woman where there was no director, and encouraged them to come to the meeting, the Baptist women meeting, and to bring women that had never attended an associational WMU meeting. Many of them brought their prospects, and the results, a new Baptist women organization in one of the churches that did not have mission organizations. And many of the Baptist women organizations reported an increase in membership, some of them as many as 4 and 5 new members. In another association, a group of interested women from a church without missionary organizations was invited to attend an associational leadership training meeting. They came, became excited about the possibilities in their church. They went home and organized the following organizations, Baptist Women, ACT Teens, Girls in Action, Mission Friends, and they provided each member with the appropriate magazine or magazines. And they say they're having a time keeping up with the magazine subscriptions because their membership keeps increasing. And would you believe this? They have challenged the men in that church, and for the first time, they also have active brotherhood organizations. Yes, we are excited in Missouri. Things are beginning to happen. Many are taking a giant step.
What's the story in Georgia, Mrs. I.W. Bowen?
We in Georgia really wanted to take a giant step, and now we want to really tell with excitement how we have started to do it. Having just reached a 15% growth goal to help celebrate Georgia's 150 years of her convention, we knew that if we were going to take a giant step in just the following year, that we would have to work in an organized, determined, even inspired manner. And so, according to proven WMU methods, we took a survey statewide by associations. And then we set to work on the information we had, pinpointing places where we had strong work, places where there was no work, and marking with great interest those spots that had potential for increase. And then we sent out a very personalized questionnaire to each of Georgia's 90 associations. We told them the names of churches that needed work. We gave them a figure that represented a 25% increase, and we asked them to accept that figure as their reachable giant step goal. Well, soon the responses began to come, and they were overwhelmingly enthusiastic. Little notes, because the were personal to us because the questionnaires had been personal, and the women felt that they needed to respond in a personal way. So Little Notes told us that they had found a prayer group that had never been counted as a Women's Missionary Union organization, or a GA that hadn't been reported. Or they might say, I know a woman in that church, and I'll contact her immediately. Or I've just talked with Mrs. Jones in the floral shop. I'm to go to her church next week and help her organize the Baptist women there. Well, thus we learned that more than 80% of our associations are working toward their agreed upon increases. And then by March, we began to have requests for recognition on Giant Step. Of the first 27 of those that reported, 19 had a 25% increase in membership. Almost 75% received it had now one organization in each age level. And all but three said they had increased their magazine subscriptions by 25% if they had not reached 100%. And more than half of the first reporters had achieved all three goals. The success stories touch every part of the state. In New Almerchi Church in North Georgia, they began this year with 39 GAs in three age groups. By May, 8 months later, they had 81 GAs in six age groups, with 16 adults working with the girls, where last year only four worked. And these leaders say that each one, bring one, cultivate one, has really caught the imagination of their girls. And from several southern rural churches, we have received letters such as this one. I'm so proud of the Giant Step in our state, in our church. You know, we now have all of our organizations going. I just had to write you and tell you how happy I am. An Atlanta suburb tells of an unusual gain when they organized a Mission Friends made up entirely of children of internationals who are in attendance at a conversational English class each week. Representing more than six countries, the majority of these preschoolers come from non-Christian homes. Meanwhile, across town, a BYW almost doubled its membership, going from 18 to 33, with an Each One Bring One Tea, which climaxed their first intensive enlistment effort. Well, the methods used have been just as varied as the people using them. In some neighborhoods, coffee time together in the morning grew by planning to a new Baptist Young Women organization. Some association assigned a church that needed an organization to each of its officers. In many churches, we have the pastor and one woman at work. Well, we still feel that we need to work in a determined and organized way. But the inspiration from somewhere within our women is really there. They say from all over, we've been able to start work in a church where we never could get it going before. Or, the spirit is so good now. One of the most enthusiastic of our reports came by telephone from Candy Smith near Atlanta. She called to ask about Giant Step recognition. And she couldn't believe that we have until September 1974 to reach these goals. She thinks she's already reached all three of them in her organization. And now her question is, may we work now toward making another Giant Step next year? Well, you can imagine our reply. May you take another Giant Step? Of course you may.
The best thing about these stories is that they're being told like this all across the USA. Stories like these are being written by women like you who want to help write the most exciting chapter of WMU history. And that story is ahead of us. Giant Step means getting in step, and it means getting more in step. As Mrs. Bowen said, the campaign will not end until September 1974, so there's still plenty of time for every church to join the march. Giant Step is a fun approach, but it's to a very serious matter. Let's leave Portland resolved to start a Giant Step parade that will leave a track for tomorrow's women and girls to follow. Each Giant Step you take will leave impressions on individual lives, but also on the broad span of world missions.
Would you like to stand for a moment and show that appreciation that I could hear in the hand clapping? And as Mrs. Allen said, every state president, executive secretary, youth director could have come to this platform and given you like stories. Now will you be seated? Last summer, Our executive secretary, Ms. Alma Hunt, was invited to be one of three to go from the United States to the first worldwide meeting of the United Bible Societies. The exciting place for this meeting was in Addis Ababa, Ethiopia. It was thought by our leaders at the Foreign Mission Board and of Women's Missionary Union that Ms. Hunt should make other journeys in connection with her trip to Ethiopia. And so it was that she went to that faraway, mystical, small country of Yemen, which has so captured our imagination as we began our medical work there. And so today, our executive secretary, Alma Hunt, will tell us about lifting the veil of Yemen.
Madam President and friends, on my departure from Birmingham to go to the Middle East, I went by my home in Roanoke, Virginia, to spend the night with my family. I told my mother that plans had gone well for the journey, except that I'd had difficulty in working out the plans to go into Yemen. The planes just didn't go very often in and didn't come out very often. And she said, well, what in the world do you want to go to Yemen for anyway? And I said, oh, Mother, you know, all my life I've wanted to go to Yemen. And she said, where in the world haven't you wanted to go all of your life? And then I reminded her that my interest in Yemen had really begun through a missionary friend of mine who was also a friend of hers. I went to YWA conference at Ridgecrest when I was a member of YWA, and there I met Ida Patterson, one of our missionaries in Shanghai, China. She and I became devoted friends, and she was often a guest in my home. After the passing of some years, she married Dr. Harold Storm, a missionary of another board in the Arabian Peninsula. And then letters came telling me about the veiled women among whom she worked in Arabia. And my interest in this country was born. In 1949, when I, with Mrs. George R. Martin, to whom we paid tribute today, worked to plan the first annual meeting in which I had anything to do with, we decided to invite Mrs. Harold Storm to speak to us. She opened up a new world to Southern Baptists, for we had not known anything about mission work in that part of the world. The response was so tremendous and the invitation so numerous from Southern Baptist groups to come and speak that she was granted permission to leave her mission for 6 weeks, come and station herself in Birmingham and travel out with our staff to state annual meetings to talk about this part of the world that we knew so little about. And then the Foreign Mission Board invited her to write the adult book for the Foreign Graded Series, which we studied in 1952. Some of you remember studying Highway in the Desert. All during this year, we have sung heralds for Christ who bear the King's command. And we have sung about those highways through the jungles. I have thought of Brazil that Marjorie Jones has brought to us about. And every time we came to that line about the desert sands, I thought of building the highway across the Arabian Peninsula, a highway to our King. In the very last chapter, the very last sentence of this book that we studied, Ida Patterson Storm, challenge Southern Baptists to come into the Arabian Peninsula. She prayed to this end. She offered her services to help us get started. She was greatly disappointed when, with the passing of some years, we did not pick up the challenge of the book. She came on furlough and came to visit me, and I shall never forget the stunned feeling I had when she said to me, "Maybe, Alma, we Southern Baptists aren't yet mature enough to go into the Arabian Peninsula. And maybe this is the reason God has not opened the door to us yet." Oh, I didn't like to hear that we could be too immature to enter what is considered the hardest mission field in all the world. In 1964, the Lord led Dr. James Young, already an established missionary in Gaza, to lift his eyes to this country of Yemen, not a land where fields were white unto harvest, not a land where even seeds had been planted. My heart rejoiced when the news came that we had appointed Dr. and Mrs. Young to go into Yemen. Finally, we had taken up the challenge which had been given to us in our mission study 12 years before. I felt that now we were going to demonstrate our maturity, and I prayed that we would not become impatient or critical, or that our enthusiasm would wane in what might be a long seed planting period. For my conversations and my correspondence with my friend had prepared me to know that progress might be slow. This land, so little known to us until so recent years. As Mrs. Mathis said, it was through the Foreign Mission Board that the possibility of my visiting Yemen became real. And I met Dr. John Huey, the area secretary, in Asmara, Ethiopia, early one morning after he had flown all night. And we boarded a plane to Yemen. Now, if you want to go to Yemen, you have to really want to go to endure the rigors of travel into Yemen. And we were willing to do this. We arrived in the city of Taiz and were met by Jim Cragmile, one of our missionaries, who was to take us where we were to visit with the missionaries. Dr. Huey held in his hand a ticket to depart on Sunday. An Ethiopian Airlines official met us to say that there was no Sunday plane out and he would have to leave on Saturday. This was very disturbing because his time was already short to be in Yemen. And Jim Cragmile interrupted the conversation to say to the official, "But I was here last Sunday and I saw the plane take off." And the official said, "Yes, that's true, but that was Saturday's plane." We learned on arrival that the precision with which we order our American lives was not operable in Yemen. New experiences lay ahead for those days, and none more exciting for a woman than the days of parties. There were two of them. June Young had visited through the years with a woman who had once come to the hospital, and she said to her, "We are going to have a guest in our mission, and I wonder if you would like to have a party so that she can see a Yemeni home." The woman said she would be delighted to give a party for me, and that at the same time she was going to have a house guest, and this would make it all the more possible and interesting to her to have a party. June Young, on hearing that this woman was to have a Yemeni guest, said to her, "Oh, if you're having a Yemeni guest, I will have a party on the following day so that your guest might see an American home." And so we went on the first day to our Yemeni party, an experience I wish I had time to tell you about, but I don't. And on the second day, we planned early in the home for our afternoon party at 4:30, when the women would come to June Young's home. Now, the missionaries couldn't waste 2 days just partying, for there was much to see, so it was planned that those who could be freed from responsibilities at the hospital would take me on a picnic so that I might see something of the beauties of Yemen. For 2.5 hours, we drove in 2 Land Rovers up the rough, rugged road to the pinnacle that was our picnic site. So high it was that whenever you looked in any direction, it was a downward look. After sitting on the tablecloth to hold it down against the high winds and enjoying our lunch, we came down those mountains in 1.5 hours in a frightening journey. All the more frightening because we realized that time was running out and that our guests might arrive. We figured that we would get home 30 minutes before they were to be there. We planned how we would dress quickly, who would introduce me, who would interpret for me, who would become the kitchen force, who would serve the guests. All of this was planned. Now, when we left on this picnic, one of the missionaries wouldn't go along. She said she knew that those Yemeni women were going to come early and she was going to stay home to meet them. We thought she was wrong and we left her behind. When we got back to the compound, we saw that the front door to the James Young's home was open. And on rushing in, I saw the blackest room I have ever seen in all my life and the most distraught missionary I ever saw, the one we had left behind. By head count, there were 104 people squatting in that room. Of course, there were no changing of clothes. I quickly was introduced and found my place to sit on the floor in the center of them, hoping to make amends for our having been late. Now, when I looked at that room, it was black because almost every head was covered with a black veil, and the women lifted their veils over their mouths and often over their noses so that all I saw was just the eyes. But after I had taken my seat among them, had sat, they became more relaxed. They began to relax their veils so that I saw more full faces. The room was totally black, except for the young girls who wore something like baby caps, heavily decorated, and 2 young women who wore pastel veils. I wondered if those two young women represented the Woman's Lib movement of Yemen. I felt no desire in that room for those women to abandon the veil. The veil is a status symbol. The women who have to work in the fields, the women of the mountains and the villages who carry the heavy loads on their heads, they have no veils. And those who have a veil consider it a status symbol. I saw it as a security blanket. For as I said, they were all covered up when I went in there. They did not know me. They relaxed a bit after they became acquainted with me. I told them how thrilled I would be to bring back a picture of this wonderful party, and I got their permission to have a picture made. But the instant the camera was lifted, at least a third of those women fled, running to the dining room to hide. At least another third covered their faces completely so that you could not see a thing but a black hump at this place in the floor, and only about a third of them stayed true to the promise that they had made that I could have the picture made. Yemen's women are veiled, but other veils enshroud the nation. The country itself is veiled, or was heavily so, until 1962, when the citizens overthrew the absolute monarchy and appealed to foreign nations to come in. For 450 years, prior to this time, the rulers had kept these people living all in almost total isolation. So far removed were they from advancing civilizations that in the early 60s, Time magazine, in an article, said that Yemen was rapidly moving into the 15th century. The history of this country is long and fascinating. It was from here that the Queen of Sheba, when she left to visit King Solomon in Jerusalem, made her departure. Sana'a, the capital of the country today, claims to be the oldest continuously inhabited city in all the world. I said, what does this do to Damascus, which my geography book said had this claim? And they said, Sana'a disputes Damascus' claim to this, for Sana'a was settled by Shem, one of Noah's sons, and has been continuously inhabited ever since. Whether this is true or not, the city was renowned for its skyscrapers before the Dutch bought Manhattan Island from the Indians. Skyscrapers 20 feet tall, without any steel or cement, which stand today. Yemen has been so cut off from the outside world that we've known nothing of her life and activity in recent years. What is a country like so cut off? The answer may not be the same for all countries that are shut off, but for Yemen, the people were without schools, without hospitals, without roads, without vehicles for travel. There was little or no electricity, almost no lights anywhere, no banks, no paper money. More tragic is the fact that 95% of the citizens were illiterate at the time of the revolution, just 10 years ago. And most tragic of all is the fact that the country had had no Christian witness for 13 centuries. It is a 100% Muslim land, and is today, except for the Christians, who may be among the diplomats or the foreign businesses new to the land. People's minds are veiled by illiteracy, which separates them from the store of knowledge to be gained through education. Their people's bodies are veiled by ignorance of modern medicine and lack of availability of medical care. And worst of all, the veils enshrouding Yemen is that one that separates the people from the love of God, which is ours through Jesus Christ. The veils which cover women's faces are of no consequence in comparison. The lifting of other veils will be byproducts of our mission effort there. Our purpose in being in Yemen is to proclaim the name of Jesus Christ, which we cannot do openly as we can in many mission fields. And so the lifting of these other veils may be means toward the end for which we are there. We were granted entrance into the country for the specific purpose of alleviating the sufferings, the hurt of the people of Yemen who were without medical care. The hospital ministers dramatically to those who come as inpatients. It ministers quietly to the tens of thousands who come as outpatients. I wish you could experience the thrill that was mine when I came to the town of storybook fame. It looked like the Arabian Nights city, the town of Jibla, where the hospital is located, and saw on its crest the palace, 900 years old, and the ancient homes and the narrow streets, and on the low hill in front, our hospital stretching out, and over it the words, Jibla Baptist Hospital. How are we received there? The fact that 104 people came to the party was very thrilling, for there is not a known convert yet in all of Yemen. There is not a church. There is not a Sunday school. Why do we stay there? This was asked me by a missionary-hearted man who tried to dampen my enthusiasm for Yemen as I told him about it. We stay there because we went there in response to Christ's command that all the people of the world were to be given the knowledge of Jesus Christ. I believe that Yemen is in God's all-seeing eye, just as is any country that is white unto harvest today. I believe that our missionaries there need us in this land to demonstrate our maturity. They are demonstrating theirs. By the way, we pray for, give support to, and send other missionaries to this loneliest of all mission fields that I have ever seen. They deserve the strengthening that comes from our partnership in the toil.
Would you locate your convention hymn books again and turn to number 16 as we sing together this great hymn, which is set to the tune of Onward Christian Soldiers, Forward Through the Ages. May we stand and sing. Number 16.
Give sin differing measure.
once again, language missions in today's West.
When some people think of Indians, that's what they think about. But here's someone who thinks differently. Harold Heine, home missionary among Indians.
For 71 days, we heard these same sounds in Wounded Knee. But now it's quiet. People are beginning to return home. But to what? A burned house? All of your personal possessions gone. A 65-year-old Indian man and his wife last Sunday shared with us the fear of going back home because in front of their house, they found a pipe driven down. They found at the bottom of that pipe was a stick of dynamite, that when that pipe was moved, the person would be blown apart. There's a half a ton of dynamite scattered out across Wounded Knee yet today. But in spite of this, there is hope. There is a wide open door. 2 days after Wounded Knee was over, I stood in the housing unit visiting with a man who is not a Christian, Mr. Hollihorn. And as I talked with him and visited with him, he shared with me, "Brother Harold, look up what they did at the fishhook factory where you had vacation Bible school last year. They tore out all the windows. They've completely destroyed all of the inside furnishings." But then he smiled and he turned and he said, "But Brother Harold, this summer it will be cleaned up and ready when you come back for vacation Bible school. Pray for us because as never before, the doors are wide open in Wounded Knee."
Thank you.
Some people live in a world of silence. For them, communicating can be difficult. But some people don't have to make a lot of noise to communicate. And here's one such person, Irene Stark, leader in Ministries with the Deaf.
Good morning. Welcome to the Northwest. I work with the deaf in Renton, Washington. We started the work there with the deaf in 1969. At the time we started, we only had 2 deaf people, and now we have 8. And in 1969 of December, we started a TV program here in Portland with Reverend Horace Duke, Reverend Harold Hitt, and Mr. Robert Jackson, who's in charge of the KGW TV Channel 8. And we're so thankful for the work that has been done through the TV ministry. And we pray that as time goes along, that the Lord will see fit in sending missionaries, workers to the Northwest. Right at the present time, there is no full-time workers in the Northwest with our deaf. And the field is so great, and we need workers among them. If you feel led in becoming a worker with the deaf and love the deaf, we need you here in the Northwest. Right at the present time, there is 2 deaf schools right here in the Portland area, like Salem, Oregon, and Vancouver, Washington. And I work with the deaf at Seattle Community College. And we have so many young people who need to know the Lord. And I'm thankful to the Home Mission Board and the WMU for their work and encouragement to us who are workers on the field.
Numbers of Spanish-speaking people in the West is increasing at a fantastic rate. Edie Polnack is crossing the language barrier so that Spanish-speaking people can hear the gospel in their own language.
Somos uno en Cristo. Somos uno in él. We are one in the Spirit. We are one in the Lord. And we pray that all unity may one day be restored. By our love, by our love. Yes, they'll know we are Christians by our love. Toda gloria al Padre, todo viene. Toda gloria al Hijo, Jesucristo el Señor, y al Espíritu Santo, quien es el Consolador, y así resplandezca nuestro amor, nuestro amor. Y así resplandezca nuestro amor. And they'll know we are Christians. by our love, by our love. Oh, thank God they'll know we are Christians by our
From every country of the world come people to visit and work in the West. Presenting the gospel to internationals is a way of sharing the word around the world. Fern Powers is a person who does just that.
19 months ago, our church first began this work that the Lord has showed us. Down in our port, we have four ships at one time, perhaps, coming to us from all over the world. And it had been there as long as Olympia, but we did not know it. Our eyes were blinded to this. But the Lord took the blinds from our eyes and showed us men from all over that needed a witness of Jesus Christ. So we ran back to our church and told them what we had seen. And from that time, we have seen 9 men make open professions of faith. Not only that, but they have started Bible classes on their church, on their ships. We have provided them with language Bibles. First of all, though, it's a unique ministry because we bring them into our homes and love them. We do things with them. We take them sightseeing. We play ball with them. We ride horses. Whatever we can do to show them that we care. And then it's easy to take them into our Sunday school classes and our training union at night and teach them from our Bible, a Bible that they know nothing about a God that they know nothing about, but they respond because we love them first. And from this, like I say, we've seen the 9 make professions of faith, and we've sent 2 of them last Sunday in our after our Sunday services. They were baptized, and the others we have sent back to their own lands, to our missionaries that have taken them and take them further into the Lord.
They come from around the world. They seek a promised land. They speak 100 languages. Share the word now, that they might understand. God's love is for all, no matter what their tongue or land. God grant that we can someday talk of how the West was won for Christ.
One deep longing. and some vainly try to fill it with pleasure. One span of time we are given for searching, but soon it is gone, just like all earthly treasure. Longing, for none less can suffice. Lead me at last to the